The movies are back, baby, and if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Y's. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all time?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint. The name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby, wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Y's. Movies, Baby!
Forever Dog!
This week on the podcast, Sylvia Moreno-Garcia's The Daughter of Dr. Moreau.
Hello, welcome to Teen Creeps, the podcast that discusses YA pulp fiction. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Kate.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent.
And today we are breaking from the genre a bit with another book by Sylvia Moreno-Garcia. This one is The Daughter of Dr. Moreau, a take on, of course, The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells, which I have not read and do not know the plot of.
Okay, so I only know this, right?
I
read it in her afterword, and it says, The Daughter of Dr. Moreau is loosely inspired by the novel The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells. That book tells the story of a shipwrecked man who discovers an island inhabited by strange creatures that have been operated on as part of Dr. Moreau's vivisection experiment. Vivisection was a controversial practice in the late 19th century, and Moreau seeks to discover the extreme limit of plasticity in a living shape by literally changing animals into men.
Yeah, I knew that in the original, he's like literally like Frankensteining like animal
sewing
parts together.
And
just a heads up, obviously, there will be spoilers for the book ahead.
Yes.
And in the in Island of Dr. Moreau, he is working on a puma, and it's eventually revealed it's being experimented into a woman. So that's where we get Carlotta from, being part jaguar. So in this book, rather than doing vivisection, he is like taking the genetics of different creatures,
gemmules,
and mixing them.
Let me read the like book jacket.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, Carlotta Moreau, a young woman growing up on a remote and luxuriant estate, safe from the conflict and strife of the Yucatan Peninsula. The only daughter of a researcher who is either a genius or a madman, Montgomery Lawton, a melancholic overseer with a tragic past and a propensity for alcohol, an outcast who assists Dr. Moreau with his experiments, which are financed by the Lizaldes, owners of magnificent haciendas and plentiful coffers. The hybrids, the fruit of the doctor's labor, designed to blindly obey their creator and remain in the shadows, a motley group of part human, part animal monstrosities. All of them live in a perfectly balanced and static world, which is jolted by the abrupt arrival of Eduardo Lizalde, the charming and careless son of Dr. Moreau's patron, who will unwittingly begin a dangerous chain reaction. For Moreau keeps secrets, Carlotta has questions, and in the sweltering heat of the jungle, passions may ignite. This is a historical novel. Also, it's a historical fiction, science fiction, historical science fiction.
How is it historical?
Historical in that it is not now.
Oh.
So like historical fiction, meaning both in that it takes place in the late 1870s, or it starts in 1871 and then 1877, I believe. And then in the afterword, she describes that it is against the backdrop of a real conflict.
I guess that's how. Yeah, because historical novel to me means based on a real event in history.
Oh, I would say historical fiction. So fiction being
that's how I think of historical fiction.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think of historical fiction of just like
being set in the past.
Yeah, being set in the past
genre.
Like, well, a, I mean, period. Being set, period piece, being set like, in the past, maybe fake people. It could be real ones because it's not fictionalized history.
Yeah, it's, and I, but yeah. I think that that is the definition of historical fiction is a fictionalized history. I thought, but I could be wrong. That's just how I always thought
I've always thought of it as like it's people that may or may not be real against the backdrop of real conflicts.
I guess because this conflict is like so very much in the backdrop.
It is very, very much in the backdrop. That way. Yes.
Because it's like, like way in the distance.
Yeah. 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 And like only really becomes a thing when like, you know, people will talk about them or like, or like at the end when they meet Juan, what's his name? Juan.
I forget.
Kumste? Kumux. Juan Kumux, who is like
an actual figure,
a person. I think is he real?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. He might be. Yes. History of the Spanish conquest of Yucatan and of the Itzas.
I guess that qualifies this as historical fiction.
Yeah. Hold on. I think Kumux is okay. Don Francisco Kumux is a chief Indian. Who was a descendant of the Lord of the Island of Cozumel, received Don Fernando Cortez when he passed the conquest of New Spain. So it's like he's like a fictionalized version of this character.
Hmm.
But I will say that the spirit of this book is still kind of like in the ancillary kind of books that we cover on our show. Because it's like,
it's a little bit science fiction, mm-hmm. a little gothic.
It's so beautiful.
I really, really enjoyed this. I really enjoy her writing.
Me too. She's such a new favorite author.
Chameleon for genre.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is wildly different from Mexican Gothic, the other book of hers we've read.
And you know what's so interesting is she's so good. Like the specific type of chameleoning, though, is that at the same time, you can tell this was written by her. But it's so
it's just, the different. Characters and story are so different.
I thought, like, I was like, man, props to you for, like, creating, like, I feel like the main character in Mexican Gothic and the main character in this are so different and yet so compelling and fully fleshed out. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved Carlotta.
Me too.
And, like.
And I loved Montgomery and I loved their relationship and I loved how it, like,
God, I loved the arc
of their relationship and that it never.
Yes.
Actually got consummated.
Because neither of them was ready.
And. I liked that it didn't, that neither the book nor Montgomery judged her for trying to sleep with him when she was like sad and drunk.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't like turn her into a different character. It didn't.
And their relationship
romanticize
was the same.
It.
Yeah.
It was just like, you are looking for something to fill the void.
And him,
and that's like
the reason.
Okay, but it's not okay for him.
Right. And that's the other thing. Like, he's not like, oh, I'm trying to protect you from doing this. Like, he's like, dude, I am going to fall in love with you. And that's really going to hurt me because you do not love me. And I've loved someone who didn't love me before. And that really fucked me up forever. And I can't do that again. And like, and she's like, true. She's like, I don't love you. Like, not in that way. And like, maybe I will someday, but like, not right now. And he's like, cool. But I still liked that they felt some kind of longing for each other. Were like, she does have a lot of sexual agency, which I really liked as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she has sex with Eduardo, she is like, okay. She's like, damn, okay. I
and
like
that's
this.
Kind of hard to pull off in this genre and time period.
And like,
and for
this
such
specific
a sheltered
circumstance,
character.
Even. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, because we're in her head sometimes. So we are in her head and then in Montgomery's head back and forth, which I love that for a romance because it's like, I mean, it's like kind of romance, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then you're it's like, romantic. Oh, he did notice her and like she noticed him.
And they
and, like,
noticed each other.
But I loved Cachito.
Me too. And I loved Lupe.
Oh my God.
I really, you really feel for the... For the hybrids, even though you don't get much time with them, just the way they're described in such heartbreaking detail.
Mm-hmm. And I just felt like this book did so many things so well. Like, it explored the idea of passing. It explored the, and yet still this character, Carlotta, is subject to colorism and, but like, it's like.
Yeah. Also loved the addressing the issue of colorism in Mexico.
And also like this idea of, I really loved her. It was a really believable arc for her, that she starts out so sheltered and loves her father more than anything, believes everything he says, idolizes him. And I felt like all of her kind of question marks happening felt earned. They weren't just out of nowhere. Yes. It's like these new people are coming in. Oh, he's like, she's discovering like, oh, maybe it's like not good that like he is so, he will do anything to, for his ambition and will keep, he will, it, she discovers, oh, we really haven't meant anything to him. And the way that he loves her is not real love. Like, he thinks it is, but it isn't. And when she, like, the first moment that she thinks you are a bad father, she thinks it in her head after he beats Cachito in front of everybody.
I loved that moment where she finally has that thought.
And then instantly she's like, oh, oh, that's really bad. I shouldn't think that.
She feels like a bad daughter.
Yeah. It felt so real.
Mm-hmm. And I, Moreau felt very like complicated and like weirdly sympathetic at the end.
Yes.
Which I was surprised by. I was not expecting ever to feel any sympathy for that character.
But then you did, because it's like, he doesn't get, like, he has lived his life for something that he will never be able to enjoy or have.
And that,
and now he's dying.
For money, he turned into this vulgar slave trade. And he like did truly think of Carlotta as a daughter. Even
I know,
though he writes about so her like coldly in his journals, he did consider her his daughter, and like his final sentiments were that like, but she was never, the best parts of him.
And it was never enough, was the thing.
Yeah.
Was that like, he could never love her for real, like a father loves a daughter. It's like he was still like through the lens of this like ambition for his discovery and like
he thought then, that when he did.
Yes.
But he was
he
not
believed
capable.
It. No.
It reminded me of our conversation.
Yes.
About like when you're the more emotionally intelligent party in a relationship, that you like kind of have to meet them where, as far as they can meet you. And like, you might be covering more distance, but that's family.
That is family. And there are examples in this book of like, when you're like, dog, you gotta just cut this person out. Like, I really loved the moment of when Montgomery is watching Dr. Moreau beat Cachito. And he's not stepping in, and he hates himself so much for it. And he remembers being beaten by his own father and how much he hated his father. And he's just like, his being driven to drink thing is so believable.
And sympathetic.
And yes, because I'd be like, maybe I would just be always drunk.
Yeah, the guilt he feels over his sister Elizabeth's suicide, because she was in a marriage that she hated, and he promised he would rescue her, and instead he spent all his money spoiling his wife who didn't really love him.
I know.
Just like trying to earn her love. It's just very sad.
And it all feels so like, yeah, like, God, I would feel so much guilt, and I would do that too if I was like so in love with this person and thinking and wanting to give them everything they like. You can get swept up in that kind of thing. And the fact that he did, and then she kills herself, his sister, and then he's like, oh, and then it turns out he could never buy Fanny's love. And then now they're separated. And it was like,
I highlighted everyone this was so passage amazing at the beginning when he first meets her, and she's only like 14.
Oh, when he first meets Carlotta.
Yeah. When he first is interviewing for the job. The doctor's daughter was of an age when she could still cling to her girlhood. Soon, though, he imagined they'd make her trade her youthful dresses for the maturity of the corset and the weight of long skirts. That's what they'd done to Elizabeth, wrapped her tight in colorful velvet and muslin and choked her to death. Elizabeth hadn't killed herself. She'd been murdered. Women were butterflies to be pinned against a board. Poor child, she couldn't know her fate yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true. He is correct, because as soon as, like, the... Because that's the other thing. It's like, not only does he see his daughter as his greatest achievement experiment-wise, because we learn that Carlotta is a hybrid. But
his one truly successful hybrid.
His one, yes, because she's perfect. She's like a perfect human, basically. But then he's like trying to suppress her like jaguar side. And he, not only that, but the second he's like, oh, I need to find a solution to the fact that, like, Lizalde, my patron, is not giving me any more money. Oh, I know. I'll, like,
marry my daughter
to his son.
And he does keep rightly pointing out, it's like, this is the right that all fathers have. This isn't just me.
Right. Which is true of that time.
Smash the patriarchy.
So Montgomery is correct. And also, I felt like, it was so, because I know that you and I saw through Eduardo instantly. But at the same time, if I were her, I would be swept up in him.
Yeah, and
this guy was paying attention to you.
Written in a way where I didn't think she was an idiot for not seeing it, which was also really hard to do.
Because also, like, she says that she likes a certain book, and he's like, oh, I don't really read. But then he starts reading it, and he, like, quotes it to her. When I saw it, and she's like, oh my God, I'm so touched. Like, maybe we do have something in common. And I see that and I'm like, girl, he read that first page and that's it. And he quoted that to you. He's never going to read the whole thing, or maybe he will. So he read a book for you. That's it. That doesn't mean.
But you do,
but you do believe it.
And up to a point, he is doing right by her. Like, he says that he's going to marry her and they have sex right there and then, but then he does follow through on that promise. He tries, he announces their marriage. He tries to stand up to his dad, but he is fundamentally like weak and serves the system that serves him.
And then when he pretty much only, I mean, then he like, when he sees his way of life slipping from between his fingers, then he's like, well, I'm going to keep you and you're going to be my mistress. Dude, when he like, offered the mistress, I was like, I know. I was like, oh my God. And she was like rightfully pissed. There was a Montgomery quote. I really loved, I mean, she's so good at writing. Like, this is going to sound really weird because I loved all the characters. I really loved all of them. But she's very good at writing men that aren't horrible. Like, or that flawed men that aren't evil.
Horrible. Because Eduardo is like horrible.
Oh, but I mean Montgomery.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah.
Like, because Montgomery is flawed for sure, but not like he is so believably a good person too, right? Like, not in a way that, like, you know, when sometimes you read historical fiction and there's like a good guy that has the politics of 2022.
Yes.
This is like not the case with
almost all of YA.
Yes. Where I'm like, then why have it be
like
then?
Bad boy, just good boy.
Yeah, exactly. But like,
yeah, Montgomery is like very like on the nose saying like, it's not right the way women are treated. And like,
right. Because also he recognizes that everyone is fucked by this system, because he also like hates the religion and like he's like, dude, and he's seen all of this because he's traveled everywhere. And you know what it is? He's experienced trauma.
Yeah, he has himself experienced trauma.
Because I'm like, I'm thinking back to like any guy that like I'm attracted to. And if he's a straight white guy, I'm like, he has to have experienced some like deep trauma. I'd be like, okay, you're like chill. And that, I mean, Montgomery, my God.
Mm-hmm.
his sister and Fanny, and then he's an alcoholic.
He fought a jaguar.
I know, to try and save a child who died anyway.
Sad.
That was sad. And also he's like, he doesn't think he's a good person. You know, he's like, I also like that Carlotta's like, she's just so open with him and he doesn't care. But then sometimes he's like, all right, three times is too many. You've been like really rude to me all day.
Yeah.
Like when she's like, you're drinking too much. You look really bad. And he's like, okay. And then she's like, you smell bad, like alcohol. And he's like, oh, okay. I was okay with you saying just that one, but like now this is too.
This is too personal now.
Yeah. But then he likes that she's like that with him. And
then I like that she is immediately contrite because it's like, she's not.
Right.
She's not.
She's like, I'm mad at Lupe, not you.
Yeah.
And I also like too that he doesn't, because she's very innocent and very sheltered, much like all of the everyone that lives there. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, what's the word? When you like make something like it's sort of like sexualized, but not that. He doesn't, well, I guess, yeah, he doesn't sexualize her innocence.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
He is sexually attracted like, oh, to her, but it's not about that.
Right. Right.
And like, kudos to the author for pulling off, I've known you since you were 14, and yeah, now I am in love with you, and I'm not grossed out as the reader.
Right.
That it's hard because to do.
It's really hard to do. And I think it's because he kind of has just been doing his own thing this whole time, and she's kind of been doing her own thing. You know what I mean? It's not like he's like,
and also he's not like going for it. He's like, wow, it's been such a pleasure watching you become a woman or anything.
No, creepy.
It's just like, unfortunately, he loves her now.
Yeah. And I like to, when he's like being pretty honest, he's like, I hate Eduardo. And he's like, sure, maybe it's because I'm jealous. But honestly, I would happily dance at her wedding if it was literally anybody else but Eduardo. Mm-hmm. Like,
he's not trying he's truly not trying to go after her.
He's never trying to possess her. He never is. You're right. He just is just like, damn, she's like so beautiful. And like, oh, there's that line where he says, we are all commodities here at Yaksak Tomb. And she is like golden rubies, but like he, and that was like the moment where I was like, you are sprung for her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's, we are all commodities at Yaksak Tomb. Commodities to be sold and traded and bartered. Our prices vary, of course. Carlotta Moreau is worth golden rubies, though with a man like Eduardo Lizalde, I wonder if he'll know it. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces. And he writes this in his head because he writes these like fucking letters to Fanny in his head.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
this poor man.
Dude, I'm like, Montgomery, Jesus Christ. And then, oh, Lindsay, how cruel was the discovery that there is no medication? It's just lithium or morphine.
I knew it was coming.
I knew that
but
too.
It
I was
is
like,
still
oh,
really sad that he's just keeping like, them compliant by drugging them.
Which I knew. I knew there
yeah,
was no
but
medication.
It's still heartbreaking.
Yeah. I also really loved the verbal arguments between Carlotta and Montgomery too.
Me too. They were like genuinely,
believably smart,
compelling, mm-hmm. and it's hard to do sexual tension bickering between characters and have it not be like cheesy as hell.
Right, exactly. Because also because here's the thing, he's not just, I feel like when writers do it, a lot of times it's just like, how can I make it be really quippy and sexy? Mm-hmm. But this, it's like their anger with each other is coming from real feelings about, it's not only I want you, but it's also I hate this thing about myself. I'm confused about this thing. I'm looking at this argument right now he's, because this is the other thing. He's mad at her for not getting the formula from the father because mm-hmm. they had agreed.
Loved this scene.
I loved this scene. So it's going to be a little bit long, but
Do it because it's good.
Let's see. It's going to be quite long. Okay. Right. Oh, right. So she, oh my God. So she had just had one of her spells that she hasn't had in a long time, where she all of a sudden is like, I can like smell that he's walking by outside my door.
That was so cool.
That was so cool. And he was, and he was standing right outside her door. And so this is the middle of the night. They're out in the garden. And what are you doing, miss? He asked and thought of a midnight rendezvous with a lover. She might be looking for Eduardo. I heard you walking around last night. You stopped in front of my door, she said, not bothering to answer his question and stepping forward. Her eyes gleamed for a second as if catching the light. She slipped in and out of the darkness with remarkable ease, and when she moved, as she did now, it was with a finesse that made him want to sigh. He lowered his lantern, setting it down by his feet. The ground was covered with a smattering of petals from a fiddlewood tree guarding the fountain. I was drinking. I don't remember where I went, he replied. You didn't drink today, and you did not smile. You are observant and smart and quick. I was an expert. It was an expert move what you did. Queen takes king. Life is not a game, she said. The swish of her wrapper as she moved was the subtle sort of music. They walked side by side, moving in circles, spinning around the light like two moths. I beg to differ. We're all chess pieces on your father's ivory and mahogany set, but you're his queen, to move freely about the board in all directions and do his bidding. Good job. Must you sour my day? She asked, with a toss of her head. It has been a good day. I have Eduardo and I have Yaksaktun. Oh, and this is because she's just announced her engagement, and she asked Eduardo, can I have Yaksaktun? And he's like, sure, whatever. Yes, indeed. I warn you off the man, and you rushed him faster than a hummingbird, but I mustn't chide you. No, you shouldn't. She swiveled on her heels, and he thought she was going to walk away from him, but she simply stood still, staring in the direction of the house. I must know I can trust you, Montgomery. Yaksaktun will have need of you. How? Someone must watch over it and the hybrids when I'm not here. You heard Eduardo. He wishes for us to live in Merida. And even if we should make our home in Vista Hermosa, it must mean leaving Yaksaktun. Your father is here. We both know he's old and ill. Besides, I may decide to run things differently now that this is all to be mine. He's giving it to me as a wedding gift. The whole of this, she said, spreading her arms. What are you thinking? My father needs to offer the secrets of his formula to the hybrids. This is to be a sanctuary, not my father's playground. What a strange thing for you to say, since you're the obedient child who loves him so well. And he's saying this because he's annoyed that her dad instructed her to, like, basically get Eduardo to marry her, and she did it. And he secretly loves her. I love Lupe and Cachito, too, and they're unhappy. I want to make sure that they'll never be mistreated. My father wishes me to be a woman grown, and I must be one. But such a position conveys responsibilities I cannot shirk. Oh, and this also, sorry, I keep interjecting. There's a moment where she's like asking her dad for the formula, and he like yells at her, and he's like, this isn't for you to do, like, you're just a child. But at the same time, he was making her be married, like, be the woman of the house and marry Eduardo. And she's like, he wants me to be both a woman and a child, and gets mad at me for being both. Like, I thought that was a really interesting
thing. Yeah, that was really good.
Thing. You've spoken to your father, then? I asked him for the formula. I'm not as big of a coward as you assume. I apologize for saying you were. She seemed surprised at that and nodded. Her back was very straight. She clasped her hands together. When I asked my father to give me the formula, he said he would not, and that I was too foolish to understand his science. I looked through my father's notes, trying to discern the answer. I've not found the information I need, but I will keep my promise. You're angry at him, then? I'm not. Anger is not what drives me to this. It is, as I said, my love of Lupe and Cachito and the others. And there's also all your love for Eduardo, a mighty amount of love you have, he said, unable to control his tongue. I'm happy and wish for others to be happy too. Is that such a terrible thing? She asked. Do you not wish others joy? What should I know? He muttered, remembering that he'd taken that blasted letter to Vista Hermosa hours before. Oh, that's right. He's also bitter because Isidro, the cousin of Eduardo, like, didn't want them to get married. So he like narked in a letter and had, Montgomery delivered the letter to the hacienda, and that's not good, or to the hacendado. Her happiness was bound to be short-lived if Hernando Lizalde caught wind of this situation. Perhaps that was why Eduardo wanted a quick wedding, hoping he might seal the bargain before his family could intervene, or else it was the pull of the blood, the want for the girl to begin warming his bed as soon as possible. If we should all be safe, then I would be happy. Is that all, then? Are you sacrificing yourself for the well-being of others? He asked. I love Eduardo. Love at that age was a fire that sparked quickly, so it shouldn't have surprised him when she spoke earnestly, but it still stung to hear her voice her affection with such ease. She'd known the boy for a second and a half, and already her lips curled with honeyed sweetness when she spoke his name. Give her a month and she'd be ready to press an asp to her breast if the spoiled brat ever left her. How would you know love from thumbing through a thesaurus or an encyclopedia? From the pen of Altamirano or another writer you fancy? Love? He's rich and that's good, Montgomery said, even though he didn't want to be spiteful. Why should you define love for me? She asked, her eyes narrowing with indignation. Love is easy when you can dangle exotic jewels in front of a lady. If he were a cobbler, for all his prettiness, you wouldn't have accepted him. He thought she might respond with a passionate tirade, but instead, Carlotta's eyes grew sad. Monty, I do not like you when you're cruel. I'm always cruel, he said, more for the sake of contradicting her than to make a real point. He was about to accede to anything she wished, and now simply delayed his surrender. No, you're not, she said, shaking her head. You like to tell yourself you are and to hide from the world. But you're a decent man, and I believe I can trust you to take care of this place. I know you love Yoxuktun. My father resides here, but he doesn't love it. Carlotta, I promise I will assist you if you ask it of me, he said. He didn't want to say he'd care for Yoxuktun, because he could hardly promise such a thing knowing that Hernando Lizalde might not sanction his son's engagement with the girl. That letter, why had he sent the damn letter? How could he look the girl in the eye with a sword dangling over their heads? And after she said Eduardo, that fool, or she loved Eduardo, that fool. She scrutinized his face, perhaps trying to find a lie, and he looked down. Thank you, she said. Don't thank me, Carlotta. I've done you no favors today, he muttered. But she couldn't possibly understand what he meant, and merely shrugged, moving away, out of his reach, her feet light, her wrapper fluttering behind her as a breeze blew through the courtyard, sending flower petals splashing against the lantern. So that was very long.
Beautiful.
But it was so beautiful. And like that kind of fight, it's like, they're fighting about so much more and they're not just like, I don't like you, but I secretly do. Like, it feels so real. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that like there is something there that's out of their reach between them.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
And the whole book is just like that, beautifully written.
Yes, the entire thing. And like you were saying earlier, like all of the hybrids are described with such beautiful detail and they're so personified. And I felt so sad for them because they're so many of them are doomed to live a life of pain. And they were created by this person and not cared for by the person.
Mm-hmm. And he has also taken on the role of preacher.
Oh, yeah. And the weird like Bible he reads to them is not, it's like different, right?
It doesn't. Yeah, it sounds like it's got some extra.
Because she keeps quoting it and everyone's like, what are you talking about?
But he's like constantly preaching on meekness and mm-hmm. and how pain is good and mm-hmm. God gives us pain as a gift and all just to try to like brainwash them into thinking that their lives, that there's like some sort of beautiful meaning in them all being enslaved later on.
Yeah, that their lives are not despair. Because what is it, that definition of despair is suffering with to no end. But he's like, oh no, but you're suffering because like, that's good. That's like part of life. And like, he's trying to ascribe meaning to their suffering when really it's like, he's just created them as part of his experiments. And the reason why they are not, the other hybrids are not as, I guess, quote, according to him, perfect as Carlotta is that, and even she like was born with a lot of difficulty and he had to do a lot of experimentation on her, is that she was, what's the word? Germinated? Gestated?
Oh, yeah. She
was in the womb of a human
woman's womb.
Yeah. And the other hybrids were in pig wombs and something about that, but it killed the woman, so he didn't want to do that again. But she was his, right? She is his.
She is actually from him. It was like the mother's egg, his sperm, with some genetic materials of a jaguar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas, like, who knows what the fuck he was doing with the other hybrids? Because, like, I don't really know. He's, like, talking about gemmules. I'm like, what is a gemmule,
yeah,
dude?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I'm looking up gemmule right now.
God, that scene at the beginning when, like, so he shows Montgomery at his interview, like, one of the hybrids being, like, suspended in some sort of liquid, and it's in some sort of sleep state, and then
That part was cool, scary.
Yeah, and sad. It made me so sad. Lupe talks Carlotta into showing her and Cachito the hybrid in the lab, because now she knows where the key is. And they go and look at it. And while they're looking at it, they like tap on the glass, and the hybrid wakes up and starts screaming inside the liquid. And Lupe's freaking out and is like, we have to save it. We have to save it. And Carlotta wants to run, and Lupe busts the thing open and breaks it, and water goes everywhere. And the hybrid comes out and like attacks
Lupe, right? It bites Lupe's leg.
Yeah, it bites Lupe. Because it's just like freaking out and in survival mode. It doesn't know what's what. And Montgomery rushes in and shoots it.
Mm-hmm.
That scene was like so scary and sad. I was so sad for the hybrid.
Me too. It's like, you're just fucking doomed, man. Dude, when Montgomery took off his clothes to go swim in the Cenote, I was like, tee-hee. And I like that, like, he was doing that. He was supposed to be like, basically, he's just like cock blocking massively. He's supposed to be like chaperoning her with like the two guys, Isidro and Eduardo. And because they're like, we want to swim in the Cenote. And he's like, okay, I'll chaperone you. And they're like, that's okay. And he's like, nope. And then he goes, and they're just like, well, I guess we'll just sit on the fucking beach. And he's like, oh, I'm going to swim. And he takes off his clothes and he's like swimming, or he is wearing pants, but he's like swimming in the water. And the guys get so like pissed off, they leave. And he walks back with her. Montgomery walks back with Carlotta, and she's like annoyed with him, and they get in a little fight, and then she runs off. And then when we were in her head, he like takes off his clothes and she's like, oh my God. She's like, look at those muscles. Oh my God. And she likes his scars and stuff. And she's like, I've never really seen a guy like that. And I like that Eduardo's different, but she's still like very intrigued and interested in him too. Like, she's like, oh, okay, so his muscles aren't as like hard as like, because, you know, he lives a life of luxury. But she's like, but his eyes, okay. And it was really interesting how she, this is another thing, she does feel some desire towards Eduardo, but she also is very titillated by how much he wants her and the feeling of him pressed against her. Whereas she does at least physically long for Montgomery. She doesn't, and I love this too, that she physically longs for him, does not love him in the way he wants her to love him, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know, maybe I will. Because I love how this book ends, too.
Because
he's never like, I need you to love me now. Because he also needs to figure his shit out.
Yeah, and he knows that.
Yeah, because he's like, I am still kind of hung up on Fanny, and I need to figure out, like, what the fuck is going on with my life. And, like, I'm also, like, really, like, almost in love with you, and, like, I need to figure that out. It's very messy. But the way he says it, I was like, oh my God. I'm going to see. Because he does say,
like, you don't need to leave.
I know. I'm like, maybe you figure it out here. Okay. He says, oh, right. Because he's like, I'm just two paces from you. And like, that's like, that was what he was saying before. And then they've been living like together in Merida to deal with the will and everything. And I loved that part too, when they're like, fine, you can have the fortune if you just don't take the name Moreau. And she's like, okay, fine. Okay. So he's like, all right, I'm leaving. And he's like trying to be really cheerful. And he's like, you don't need me now. She says, you'd say you'd stay with me if I needed you. She reproached him nevertheless, because she was selfish. You don't need me now, he said cheerfully. You've got yourself and your strength, and you have Lupe. I know, yet I do not like this parting. And besides, there's something you're not saying, and I hate when people keep secrets. He took off his hat, and his easy mirth was spoiled as he gave her a wry smile. I think it's no secret, he said, but his voice was low. I need a little distance from you. Those two paces I told you about? They're more like an inch now. Perhaps I'll gain a measure of perspective. Perhaps not. I'd like to try. As if to punctuate his words, he took a couple of steps towards her, and she did not move away. But she did not come close either. There was no tremor of her lashes. She regarded him straightforwardly as she always had. The silence between them had a weight to it. "If I said I loved you, then you would stay, wouldn't you?" she muttered at last. Again, he smiled his wry smile. "Then I wouldn't love you, for you'd be dishonest, and I'd know it. I never wished to drive you away." "You aren't, not truly. Don't apologize." She felt sad, but she stood straight and dignified, extending her hand. "Whatever may happen, I will stay in touch with the lawyer and forward my address. Should you wish to find us, you can turn to him. Look for us at Journey's End. Whether something changes or nothing at all, look for us. I'll make an offering for you so you may find your way back." He shook her hand and smiled. Then he placed his hat back on his head and grabbed his small suitcase. "Good luck to you, Carlotta, on your own journey," he said. And then she's like thinking about like, cause she like is like, okay, this here. She pictured it crystal clear, the house in a secluded spot, away from prying eyes and curious questions, in the southeast, near mountains, by the bend of a river or the ocean. She wasn't sure of the exact spot, but she could smell the flowers and the dew and the leaves and the young trees. They'd be safe and the world would be good, and the house would be filled with the laughter of her family and the people she cherished most. They were out there, the others, and they'd find their way back to her. The tide comes out, but then returns. They'd be reunited. She thought of the jokes Cachito would tell and how Lupe would roll her eyes at her when Carlotta became sentimental and wept for joy. She heard the voices of all of them, engaged in animated conversation. In the chapel where they prayed, she had spotted an Eden without flaw and knew that there needed to be no bitterness in God's creation. The heaven they would build would be theirs and not built by a man. The heaven they'd build would be true, for she had hope and she had faith, and she clutched her sister's hand. She had, most of all, love. She pictured the dusty road that led to the house. It would be perfectly visible from her window, from her room, which would be bathed golden and soft each day by the sun's rays. Until one morning, when the weather was fair and the birds sang in the trees, there'd come a single rider down that road. He'd move without haste, and she would walk slowly to the gates of the house and wait there, patient, until he reined his horse and dismounted. Then she'd smile and she'd say, "Welcome home." And that's it, and that's the end.
That's really good.
It's so good, and it's so beautiful, and like, it's so, like, it is, like, not cheesy. You know what? It's cheesy, but not corny.
It's romantic.
Yeah. It's romantic that she wants to build this, like, this refuge for hybrids to just be able to, like,
live
and be left alone.
She's a genuinely good person. She feels this way before she finds out she is a hybrid.
Yes. Yes. She, like, wants to keep Yaxxikhtun the way it is because, like, they've been unbothered. And she never wants to leave. Yes.
She really is. She truly loves her life.
Because Lupe wants to leave. And she's like, but why can't we just have it be like this? And I think she realizes that the thing that she wants is this idealized version of that and not what she really had, because that a lot of it was a lie by her father. But the feeling of safety and of being like enclosed away from people that would seek to make them not live how they want to live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like I have been talking too much.
I feel like I don't feel that you have been talking too much, but for some reason I am finding myself like at a loss for words.
Because it's just such a good book.
Yeah. And like you feel like you're talking too much because you were reading passages. That's not you talking too much.
It's true. I guess I was just reading.
It's not you. That's you reading a passage and me listening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I almost feel like I don't know why I don't have that much to say about it. It's just like really good.
Oh, it was cool when she goes full jaguar and like eats Eduardo.
Yes.
And then
that was great. I was waiting for that.
I was so happy. And then I loved that he was like still kind of gurgling on the ground and Montgomery comes and fucking shoots him in the face. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh my God.
A 1-2 punch.
Yeah. He was just like, you got to make sure, you know, which is true. You got to.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I hated Isidro.
Always end the bloodline. Always do a headshot.
Yep. Did you
hated what?
Isidro.
Oh, Isidro. The worst is maybe the dad, though.
Oh,
not the doctor, but the
Hernando.
Hernando, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think the worst is actually Eduardo.
Well, because he's so insidious.
Isidro, but Eduardo's like thinking he's a good man.
Yes.
And being such a little wiener.
Whereas like Isidro's like,
he just doesn't like her, and that's very straightforward.
Yeah, and he's like a man of God or whatever, and he's like a little annoying about that when he's like, that Eden painting looks pagan. Because like, where's the snake and where's Adam?
It's just Eve reigning in a garden.
Like, huh?
You can't have that.
And I liked that Eduardo's like, just shut up.
I love also every single one of the covers of Silvia Moreno Garcia's books.
Yeah, they're all so beautiful. It's funny. Like,
this cover is so gorgeous.
So gorgeous.
Carlotta, it's very funny. Is so pretty.
She's so, this is a kind of cover that like when I was a kid, I would have stared at her forever and been like, yep. Carlotta's so pretty.
She's so pretty.
She's so pretty. And her dress is so pretty. And all of her outfits are really pretty.
Uh-huh. She's got beautiful gold eyes.
Oh, yeah. And they get even more golden when she's jaguarish.
When she goes jaguar?
Yeah. Jaguar.
Jaguar.
Do you think that Montgomery is saying jaguar every time he's talking about a jaguar?
Oh, he is British.
He is British.
One could only conclude.
I love when this show gets us to find like some of my new favorite authors.
Yeah.
Cause who like I
wouldn't necessarily have read otherwise.
Yeah.
But I am so drawn to these covers that I might have picked it up.
Well, it's so funny. I was talking to Ryan Mogi and I like to go to this bookstore together. And I was like, I was literally talking. I was just like, oh, yeah, a book on my list is The Daughter of Dr. Moreau by Silvia Moreno Garcia. I'm really excited to read it because it's new. It was new at the time. And then I literally, in the same sentence, turned to the bookshelf and I'm like, whoa, that cover is so pretty. And then it was The Daughter of Dr. Moreau. I was like, what's happening?
That's fine.
So I had to buy it.
You must.
It was so good. I really loved it. This is a must read.
I would say so. Yeah. We got to cover more of her books.
Yeah, she's got quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
Velvet Was the Night, which is, I think, in between Mexican Gothic and this one as far as when she published them. And that one is a noir. And then Gods of Jade and Shadow is, her first novel. And then it says, and a bunch of other books. And then I saw this. She has also edited several anthologies, including the World Fantasy Award-winning She Walks in Shadows, a.k.a. Cthulhu's Daughters.
Mm.
Seems interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She's so good.
Yeah.
She's so good. Okay. Jacket Design and Illustration, Face Out Studio / Tim Green. Tim Green, you did a good job.
Oh. Gotcha.
Art Direction, Cassie Gonzalez. Okay. You guys, you did a good job.
Kudos.
Yeah. What a great book. This book was one that I thought about a lot too. When I wasn't reading it, like that world just felt so fully realized that I was like dreaming about Yaksaktun.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded so beautiful, didn't it?
Yeah.
I want to swim in a cenote. Actually, I think I have. I have. When I was a kid, we went to Cancun, Yucatan Peninsula. Oh,
well.
And I swam in one and it was really cool. There were all these weird little salamanders swimming in it. It was really cool. Like the stairs were carved out of stone that were like going down the walls of it. And there was like big lush ivy that was like growing down into it. And the air was so much cooler as you came down to the bottom of it. And the water was like very icy and clear. It was really cool. Really, really cool. So that's my cenote experience. I can't say that I saw any hybrids. That would have been pretty cool, but did not see any.
I cannot tell a lie and say that I saw it.
but anyway, I'm excited to read more of her stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate you.
We sure do.
And if you want to support our show, leave us a happy review on anything, tell people about our show, or support us on Patreon, patreon.com/teencreeps. We got a lot of really cool stuff for you. Including ad-free episodes of all of our shows. And what? Of all of our episodes. I don't know why I said shows.
well, I'm tired enough that I didn't even notice. So
you're just like, uh-huh.
I was like, yes, our shows. All of our shows.
And
all two.
And our Patreon producers, we want to give you a quick shout out. Thank you, Aaron Fernandez.
Adam Helwitz.
Amanda Kay.
Amanda Nangle.
Amy T.
Ann Dwyer,
Caitlin L,
Carrie H,
Charlie Burns,
Christina Descaro,
Courtney McPhail,
Danielle Lamana,
Danny B,
Drew Waranis,
Ellie Lagos,
Emma,
Emma M,
Aaron B,
Gabriela Santiago,
Gwendolyn Ludovic,
Hannah L,
Jason H,
Jeremy Kronk,
Jeremy Goodfellow and Marco Pavlicic,
Jessica Smith Harper,
Jesse T,
Jessica U,
Jonathan Venable,
Karen Lewis,
Kat Miller,
Katie Olsner,
Keith Anderson,
Kelly Burns,
Carrie Norton,
Coy,
Landry Desmond,
Larry Nguyen,
Laura Hooper,
Megan Lozier,
Melody,
Micah Yunus,
Miguel Camacho,
Miranda Hester,
Molly G,
Molly Marks,
Noah Spargo,
Rashad B,
Randy Klett,
Rebecca Goss,
Robert F,
Rogue Kalahua,
Sasha Gibson,
Shannon P,
Sylvie T,
Victoria Beck,
and Victoria Gray.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. We really appreciate the support. We will see you next episode when we are covering
a What are book. We covering? We don't know. That was an original.
Tune in then.
Let me see. Oh, I know what we're covering.
What?
Fear Park, the first Scream by R.L. Stein.
Oh, if we can get our hands on it.
If we can get our hands. Someone's been reading that book. Three of you, actually, because I'm number three on the wait list.
Ugh.
What the hell is even that?
Rude.
Anyway.
Rude. We have a podcast to do.
I know. So we might be covering that. If not, we'll be covering a different
something,
Stein
and
book.
We'll get to that one eventually.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time. Keep it creepy.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.